everybody, and welcome back to the I Don't Know Running podcast, where we share our experiences that make running fun and sometimes not so fun. I'm Lewis, and I'm a self-admitted lazy ultra runner. And this is another episode of You Don't Know What You Don't Know.
And this is Terrence Rubin with PT Sports Pro. I said self-admitted PT, you know, the last time, but yeah. I think I'm more than just self-admitted, right? They've got a license behind that name. So, but happy to be here and talk to our athletes about You Don't Know What You Don't Know.
And I'm Dave DeBrato, clinical manager at PT Sports Pro.
Self-admitted, even.
No, I'm sticking with it.
At least not self-appointed, right?
Yeah, true. That would be bad. Both licensed here. And Mitch is off doing an. As we mentioned in the last episode, he's off again doing another marathon. So we have Mitch 2.0 and 2.3 joining us, or 2.0 and 3.0 joining us for this episode. And this episode is an exciting one because we get to kind of tease out and announce some things that are coming for PT Sports Pro. Number one, an open house. Well, number one, you guys are already open.
That's right. Open for business April 8th. We started seeing patients and, the schedule's filling up slowly. We're trying to get the word out to the general public. And the same time, we're working within the practice through our business office manager, Kendall Barajas. She's really kind of
If I call PT Sports Pro, that's who's taking my call and getting me connected.
Kendall or Jill. Jill is our admin assist.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but Kendall is working in the background with all the insurances to get us more approvals on that end. But in the meantime, we understand that a lot of our patients and athletes they don't care. They're like, we want to see you guys. How do we get to see you? So we've created some really nice options. If you go to our website, click on the physical therapy about the services tab, tells you about physical therapy. It tells you exactly who we have approved so far and then how we're handling people that are not within our network yet.
Gotcha.
So we've got an option for an out-of-network kind of insurance plan, and we also have an option for self-pay, and we can direct all of those things right to our patients and click on a link, and you can schedule it right there. You don't have to even make a phone call.
Oh, nice. Everybody likes that.
Yeah.
Most people like that.
Well, you know, the scheduling system has always been a pain, right? Because these days, who wants to talk to people, right? We text and we message and we want a response. And with this system, we've been playing around with it. And again, for those of our patients that have used it, they found it to be super simple.
So I should have asked you this before. When is the VO2 max testing coming? I want to know.
So we are going to be moving in a bunch of the equipment over the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
I think it's this week. By the time
that's sweat analysis too, right? Or do you already have that?
Yeah.
Okay,
So all of those things will be rolling in, I would say, in the last week of April.
Okay.
So like right around now, we should be, everything in place. But our exercise physiologist that's going to be running the lab won't be starting till early May. And so that's when you'll be able to do the testing.
All right. Well, I need to get on the website and get an appointment scheduled for that. That is one thing I want to do is the sweat, the VO2, any kind of analysis I can get. And we should have discussed this up here too, but it is something where I want to come in and videotape this My gosh, how old am I? Record this and do something on the podcast, whether that be with YouTube or You Don't Know What You Don't Know, or with I Don't Know Running, but show people how this happens, how all this takes place.
Absolutely. And I think with the way we can schedule that, there won't be any other patients in our facility after 1 o'clock on a Friday.
Cool.
So we just need you to sign a release.
Yeah.
And then, when it's all said and done, we'll give you a little VHS tape for you.
You get a VHS tape even.
Maybe a Betamax.
Beta, or what was the latest laser discs? What were those?
Things.
Well, speaking of Fridays, you guys have an open house coming up too.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Don't know when exactly, but when this airs, the 20th, I think 24th. You said. 24th.
Yeah.
It is coming soon.
It'll be within the next 3 or 4 weekends. Yeah. So it's going to be on a Friday. I can tease that out.
Perfect.
It won't be on May 10th. I can tell you that.
The third.
We're all getting ready for Riverbank run.
Yep.
Right. But it's going to be a Friday, probably from 4 to 7. It'll be at our practice. It's open to all. So come in, check out the space, you know, grab a drink, a cocktail and a hors d'oeuvre, meet some cool people.
Check things out. You get to see the place, see all the rooms and all the equipment and gear you guys have. You get to meet the people that are helping you, all the professionals. And then you also potentially meet us.
Well, that's for me, I think, Mitch. That's the most exciting thing is like we are hoping that we can have the I Don't Know Running crew out there live streaming from our conference room because we have a great conference room. A couple of episodes ago, I'm sure when we did one of our episodes from the practice, folks could see that. And who knows? Maybe we'll invite you into the conference room to have a little 100% chat with us, right?
If you come in and you want to talk, we want to sit down and talk with you, find out why you're there. Within limitations, obviously, but like, do you know Terrence? Do you know Dave? Do you know somebody else? Do you want to just come in and get to see the space or whatever?
Free food.
Free food. The coffee. Come on.
Coffee is epic.
Dave, you're going to be a little bit busy on that day.
Here. Yeah, right. That'll be my only job on opening night there.
You better have a Dave, what do you call it?
Jura Dave.
Jura Dave apron. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
JD.
JD, yeah.
If you know, you know.
Well, that is exciting stuff, and it's coming very, very soon. When this does air on the 24th, be looking in the next few weeks. It is going to be an exciting time. It's going to be a really fun time. Come out and join when we can say, and we'll post it, or I mean, you guys will be posting immediately as soon as we have the date, or as soon as you guys have the date nailed, and then we'll be obviously posting it as well. And
I was going to say, do follow us on social media. You know, PT Sports Pro, we have our own social media link on Facebook where we do quite a few of our updates there. Some really cool videos that got released a couple of weeks ago about our practice. And we're excited about this gift to our community. We really are.
Yeah.
To see, you know, to plan it all, you know, in a year in the making, so to speak, and now to see it actually come to life. It's just been an incredible blessing. I'm so excited about what we can do in our community with this.
Yeah. And speaking of community and giving back, one of the questions that we've gotten to kind of answer or talk about, I think it was emailed as soon as we announced, hey, PT Sports Pro is coming on and going to be joining for this segment of the podcast for the You Don't Know What You Don't Know. One of the things that was asked was about plantar fasciitis. And I think it was kind of jokes about how to get it. And I was like, no, not how to get it, but rather I'm having, and we discussed this a little bit earlier, having the feeling of plantar fasciitis, but it might not even be that. But let's talk about that a little bit and try to answer the unknowns there of, hey, I've got this feeling, feels like it's that because that's what people tell me, but let's speak to that a little bit.
So I'm glad you got this feeling. I was going to break into song for a minute there. But no, I think, we're going to talk about recovery today as the main topic. But we wanted to take a few minutes on the front end of this segment to at least answer some of the questions that listeners have. And one of the questions was on plantar fasciitis. And there's a couple more topics that we'll probably cover before we jump into recovery. When it comes to plantar fasciitis, there are so many patients and clients that come into my practice to see me and say, I have plantar fasciitis, can you help me? And after a round of questioning, and then an examination, I find out that the plantar fasciitis that they have is not a true cause of the problem. It's a symptom of something else that's going on.
Yeah.
So whenever I look at the foot or the plantar fascia, I always try to make sure that an exam with us doesn't just cover us looking at the heel on the foot, but we go all the way up to even just above the knee.
Oh, wow.
Because of the muscles that originate. So for example, anatomy lesson 101 here, your calf muscles, where you see them is not where they originate. They originate above your knee joint, in the back of your knee, but above your knee joint, not below your knee joint.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the tendons start above the joint, but then the muscle becomes a bulky belly of a muscle in your calf, and then it narrows down to a tendon at your Achilles, and it inserts into the back of your heel.
Okay.
There's another muscle in between that calf muscle, that gastroc muscle, called the posterior tibial tendon, and it's a very deep muscle that's buried inside the belly of where the two lateral and medial gastroc muscles run. And that deep muscle inserts all the way down in towards the heel, towards the inner part of the heel. And so with that insertion point, oftentimes when the posterior tibial tendon is irritated, it can give you pain in almost the exact area where your plantar fascia originates.
Hmm.
And so that is why we...
So it could be something up in your calf.
In your calf.
That's causing...
And I don't even know if I can put a percentage. I would say at least 75% of the plantar fasciitis, you know, diagnoses, maybe even more, that come in are actually calf issues or posterior, specifically posterior tibial tendon issues.
Okay.
The problem is that you cannot get to that posterior tibial tendon on your own because as soon as you try to push on it, you tighten up your muscles.
Oh.
So you almost need to be laying on your belly, relaxed, and have a trained clinician get in there to work that muscle.
Yeah,
it's quite close to the bone, essentially, like to the tibia.
I hear that and I say, it's going to hurt, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Heck yes.
Yes.
It won't hurt us, but we'll feel your pain.
Yeah. But it's very necessary.
Absolutely necessary. And of course, again, I'm jumping into these specific cases that often get missed or misdiagnosed. Just recently, I've had someone come in that has had like months and months of therapy to her plantar fasciitis. Diagnosis to the heel and all sorts of other treatments like dry needling and ultrasound and lots of stretches and exercises. And it wasn't getting any better. But each time she would get enough temporary relief that she would want to go back and just to get something better than nothing. And when I looked at her and started looking and following this up the posterior tibial tendon, she's like, no one's ever looked there before.
Hmm.
So after my evaluation examination, I decided, you know, let me just treat this segment of the tendon and nothing else. I didn't even touch the heel. And she called me the next day saying she was able to go out and run pain-free for the first time in many, many months.
Wow.
And then weeks later, I bumped into a husband who said the same thing. He's like, man, you fixed in, you know, less than half an hour what my wife has been dealing with for years. And now she's out there running and enjoying herself.
So, awesome.
The key that we're trying to get with our practice and our program is we're not just going to, yes, we're going to listen to what you're saying, but we're not going to just zone in on that. We want to make sure what else could it be with any injury. So our approach to any kind of injury management is as important as anything else we do, that we get down to where the problem is. And what's nice about that approach is that it really is almost not good for business in the sense that we don't see you for that long of a period of time, but we do get you better.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about packing on a ton of visits if I can't fix you. So I want to fix you up and get you out and make room for the next person.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's the best... what's the word I'm looking for?
The best approach, the best philosophy.
When somebody gets a review, it's not a review, but when somebody gives you a good, like,
oh yeah,
what am I looking for? Why am I without words today?
You're missing Mitch, I think. That's what it is.
It must be. Bounce stuff off him and I can think of stuff.
You need Jura coffee.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. Is not enough. You should have brought some with you.
Yeah, but I think in terms of a peer review, you know, that would be the best kind of peer review that you would, you know, get out there. Someone word of mouth.
So the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway isn't, well, do this to fix this. You need to go get checked out by a clinician that's going to look a little deeper than just here. This is what you can do to stretch your plantar fasciitis.
Right. And you know, sometimes the plantar fascia does need some work. But both areas need to work. So you can't work on one versus, you know, the other.
Yep.
And you know, I remember some listeners on this show today would remember Dr. Peelan years ago. He was like the foot guru in town.
Okay.
And he would say something like, you know, there's no such thing as plantar fasciitis. It doesn't exist. And I never understood why he said that until I started looking at the anatomy a little further in terms of what he was getting to. Yes, there is plantar fasciitis from a medical standpoint where your plantar fascia gets inflamed, so it becomes a plantar fasciitis. But I think his whole point was that there's so many other things that are leading to that is not a primary diagnosis. So.
Yeah. because realistically it's how much really happens because of that spot on the foot. It's realistically way upstream.
Exactly. It's pure due diligence that we as clinicians look in the other places.
The question on that really quick. Can somebody be doing something to help stretch that without, let's say I don't have a problem, or I had something in the past. Should I be stretching a certain way to help maybe set myself up better to not have that happen again? Or is that just something that you need a clinician to go in and like massage that out? I don't know the terminology, but you know, go in there and fix that.
Your innocence without profession is well appreciated.
I don't know the terminology, so I'm trying to be cautious of that.
See, that's why.
You're not masseuses, but...
If we were a bunch of clinicians sitting around the room, this conversation may go over most people's heads. So now we can just, you know, get it down to the Lewis and Mitch
version.
There you
go. I need it very simplified.
No, but you're right. In a sense that when you have this inflammation of the tendon, right... What happens is every group of muscles in the calf is, there's actually four groups of muscles that are wrapped in fascia, this saran wrap that surrounds the muscles that keeps the muscle from overexpanding outside of its normal, you know, look, right? So a muscle looks like this form because of the way it's wrapped with this non-stretching saran wrap or fascia. So when you get to the posterior tibial tendon and that gets inflamed, it pushes against the fascia that gives you some pain in there, but the tendon itself doesn't glide through the fascia.
Huh.
So if you stretch it, all you're going to do is just creating a tug, but without a deep tissue release, you cannot release the tug, which then won't release the tension that it's creating into the in the foot and heel.
See, you explained that so well. I understood that.
Well, you know, I have prided myself over 30 years of practice of really making sure that my patients understand the what and the why.
Yeah.
So if someone comes to me, I don't just like, oh, you have a hamstring strain and we'll just stretch it. I'm like, no, here's what's going on. Here's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Here's what I'm hoping to achieve by doing that. And the more clued up the patients are when they come in, the more educated they are about, you know, here's how this is going to help me, the more likely they are to even benefit from the help you're trying to give them. So there's a component to health that's beyond just the physical. And we want to make sure we address our athletes at all levels. So even as an educational side of things, helping them understand plantar fasciitis and plantar fascia and how that works and when it can get irritated, what can you do and when do you need to seek the help of a professional? All of those things matter.
Yeah,
and because of patients like that, we actually created something at our practice called a VIP visit. So the VIP visit, anybody can get on our system, schedule a VIP visit. It's a 45-minute one-on-one visit, and it's basically like a concierge consult. It's $125 for that visit, but you come in, and you're like, you know what? I'm not sure what it's going on. Can you check me out and tell me what I should be doing next? And we'll point them in the right direction. And if that direction means that, hey, you know what? You need a physical therapy evaluation and treatment, then we'll schedule that and point them in that direction.
You like talking vehicles, so it's kind of like the 27-point inspection for a vehicle that comes in on trade-in or something.
Right. Because the last thing you want is someone to not know, and because they don't want to waste the time jumping through all the loops, they do nothing about it, and then an injury gets to a point where it cannot be managed. If they have a way to see us sooner, I mean, it's totally worth the money that they would spend to come in. I've had people that even said, we'll pay you more for that kind of, you know, once-off kind of thing. Because we think there's value in that.
Yep.
And we're not doing it to make money. We're doing it to create an access point for you, our patients, our clients.
Yeah, we've talked about that several times on the podcast. Prior to PT Sports Pro being officially the you don't know what you don't know, just the access and all of that side of things, which is very exciting and for me, and I'm sure many others, just to not have to jump through all the hurdles or jump through all the hoops and all the hurdles. But hey, let's get into some recovery discussion.
Yes.
Let's talk. Hey, I just went and did whatever. Well, you know what? We didn't talk about this. So I couldn't join Mitch on the marathon. So I went out and I did my own marathon last weekend, Friday. I just said, you know what? I can't go. So I'm just going to go run a marathon. I think I wanted, matter of fact, we should have talked about that. I think there were some things I wanted to ask you about with regards to that.
Guess
but
what? We have time. And we're running the podcast.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but I will say this. I think you had mentioned recovery, and I thought, what is a great way to recover from, I did this, and you brought this up prior. I just took a few days off. I got done with the run on a Friday, and I didn't run until Tuesday. Didn't do anything else. So, what should I be doing?
Oh, there's some magic in this answer. I have Magician Dave.
So,
we'll take a dive. That's a great question, though, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you talk about the aspect of recovery, it really encompasses a whole lot of ideas and a whole lot of options.
Laying on the couch, laying in bed.
Right.
No?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Some. Yeah, some. Totally. Yeah, there's many modes, really, that you can think of. Exactly. Just a lot of coaches, a lot of high-end scientists will suggest, yeah, just be on your butt.
Oh,
For sure.
Okay.
From a standpoint. And so really when you think about recovery, I would first say that when you're putting in high volume, especially if you're putting in high volume, you're putting a lot of time into your training. You really need to carve out some time that is dedicated to recovery.
Specifically, yeah.
And to the extent of a one day off per week is a pretty good standard. Now, what that one day a week can look like is really if you have spent 6 days prior in that week, heavy volume or a good amount of intensity, and you're exhausted, your body is telling you that, yeah, you do need to spend some time off your feet. And just allow your body to settle and go through its process of really what recovery is adaptation. Your body is getting the chance to adapt to the loads that you've placed on it.
Okay. So the next time I go back, it's more adept to handle what I'm throwing at it.
Yeah. And
healing, right? You know,
yeah.
What does adaptation and healing kind of go side by side? Adaptation is basically you're creating a slightly better, improved version of yourself because you trained it, so you should see that improved version.
Yep.
And healing is that tissue just needs time and space to calm down and to relax and to, you know, rejuvenate.
Yeah.
Right. If it's, so to say, interrupted by too much activity on that recovery day,
yeah,
then your body is slowed from
recovery.
From both healing and adapting, yes.
And then impacts performance, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think from a recovery standpoint, there's the complete rest and then there's the relative rest. So what we want to talk a little bit about is everyone knows what complete rest is.
Yeah.
Do nothing.
Yeah.
But there's also the relative rest. And then there is people that don't take any rest. They're like, oh, but I just did to just keep going.
Mitch.
Him who must not be named.
Which I don't agree with.
And so something's going to give if you take that third option.
Yeah.
But in the state of complete rest, psychologically, it can create a whole bunch of crazy ideas in your head that can mess up an otherwise well-thought-out program.
Mm.
So understanding what relative rest looks like, I think, is going to be key. And so Dave, he's going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the physical aspect of relative rest and recovery, but there's a mental aspect about recovery that also needs to be covered. And I'm going to touch a little bit about that.
Okay. Because I have a thought on that because I just went through this. My mental aspect of taking that time off was not a good one.
Right.
I would say it was negative because I felt like I shouldn't be. Because number one, I didn't go out and hammer a marathon. Like I didn't go out and try to like run super fast. I went out relatively easy, but it's still a marathon, right? So it's still long. It's still a lot of load and all of that. But so mentally, when I took time off, I was like, yeah, I can take it off. But then I felt it was like, well, I kind of feel like I'm missing out.
Right. And I think, again, some people like you, may have the ability to like, you know what, I'm going to go and run a marathon this Friday. Whereas others, and we've talked about the importance of a training plan, right?
Yeah.
You plan, okay, I'm going to be doing a speed workout on this day. I'm doing a tempo workout. I've got my long workouts, and then I've got my races. And within that segment, you have your low phases, your easy phases, you have your medium phases, you have your high phases of training. And so just as you plan the details of those things out, you also should plan your recovery.
Yeah.
So you're not just like, well, you know, that day I'm just not going to do anything. But that day I'm going to choose to not do something.
Yeah.
So the mental, the intentional aspect of choosing to not do something versus like, you know, I ran a marathon. Maybe I should take it. It's not a maybe. It is like I've done a marathon. My plan says that today is my recovery day.
That's interesting.
So that changes the focus altogether as to how your body then responds to that. And then you won't have the ongoing thoughts of, I should be doing something. Why am I just sitting here doing nothing?
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to really push that idea of, you know, whatever comes out on the physical side has to start with how we think about recovery.
That's a good point. And to add to it, here's my race plan. My training plan was at mile 16, I decided to run the marathon. So my planning, you can see, is not the best.
Well, which is why I started off by saying, now in your case, this is a little different.
Yeah, a little bit different. But anyway, so let's get to the mental recovery.
So the physical side of recovery. Right?
Okay.
And what does that look like? You know, are there things that you can do that may not be as harmful? Or should you just be like doing absolutely nothing?
Gotcha.
But that's dependent on a couple of factors, right?
Okay.
As to like, okay, what did you do before in terms of a race? Because each race has a different type of recovery. Each training, you know, which part of, if you're in the easy phase of your training versus in the super high phase, your recovery looks different. So not all recovery is the same, which is why we wanted to dedicate, you know, a whole session just trying to understand recovery, the why we do it, the how we do it, and the when we do it.
Gotcha.
So how does that maybe help our listeners understand how recovery looks different in different phases of training?
Yeah. So within your training, I got to say to you, kind of start things off there, that a lot of people think that way about recovery. They think that it's sort of more harmful than good, is because their body is their mindset and their body is also used to this consistency.
Yeah.
And breaking that consistency is kind of like a, ooh, no, I'm not doing what my body has been doing.
Yep.
Consecutively. So therefore, to really step back and say that, okay, I'm utilizing this time to allow my body to heal is what's very important there. And so in saying that, yes, laying down, allowing your body to recover from pure rest is important. Though, despite the many tools and options that are available for recovery, actually one of the best ways to promote recovery efficiently is very, very light activity. So simply walking, you know, going for a very light, easy walk for a period of time, doesn't need to be long at all, but walking is allowing to pump the blood through your muscles. And when we talked about the capillarization in the muscle tissue that is enhanced by your training, you're allowing to pump your body to pump the blood through those capillaries, get oxygen to your muscles at a very, very low load. And they love that. They thrive off the oxygen. So they are then going to recover as best they can without being even the slightest bit
taxed or
damaged from activity that you're accomplishing that healing and adaptation.
And I think this is that whole idea of relative rest, right? Where it's not complete rest, but there's some things that you can be doing. And the other thing that we want to understand both anatomically and physiologically, as we work our muscles and our systems, our lymphatic system, our blood system through these harder workouts, it's not just a one flush and done to get rid of the metabolites. Over the next few hours of healing and recovery, your body is pushing out those toxins from the muscles, and they do need to be transported away from the muscles and through the system to be efficiently expelled. So if you are completely rested, you're not doing anything to really enhance that system. But by doing some relative rest things, like what Dave is recommending or suggesting, that's where you still enhancing the circulation, the turnover, without the stress of a hard workout.
Yep, yeah. That makes sense.
And like what he's saying is, if you're training for a 10-mile run and you're running 1 mile a day, that recovery day isn't going to have as much of a benefit to your training.
Yeah.
But if you're training on the very other end of that, the other extreme of that, 10 miles a day, 6 days a week for a 10-mile run. Yeah, that's why I brought that. Then that recovery is going to be crucial and very, very beneficial.
That's what I was going to say, as you guys both were kind of finalizing that little piece, was, well, how do I know what kind of recovery I need for any given run? Now, granted, I can pretty safely assume when I did the marathon that I needed recovery, whatever kind of recovery, I needed recovery, right? But let's say the prior, like whatever week where I am doing, let's say a 10, an 8, a 6, a 10, how do I know when I need recovery?
Your body has a way of telling you these things, and which is why there is no one answer, one size fits all.
Okay.
So some people, because, you know, you could be doing, you know, back-to-back runs at an easy pace, and your body is just, it's almost like each day is almost like a recovery of the previous day.
Yeah.
But you could also be doing the same exact same mileage, but at a much harder pace. And then that creates a higher demand, which then means it needs a little bit more time to recover. So back to my automobile, you know, kind of comparison.
Yeah.
You drive a car nice and easy. And when you pull over after an hour, the engine is kind of comfortably warm. You drive a car really hard. And even after 10 minutes, that you can feel the heat of that engine. So if you have the slightly warm engine, it'll cool off after a few minutes. You have the super hot engine, you got to give it a little bit more time to cool off.
Yeah.
Your body's almost the same way. So when you push it really hard, you're going to have to do that with some of your training efforts, but then give yourself a little bit more recovery time, which is where the plan comes into effect, because in your plan, it'll say, you know, running 16 to 26.2 miles hard.
Somewhere in that window.
versus running it easy. And so if I'm running it hard, I'm going to take 2 days of relative recovery. If I'm running it easy, I'm going to take 1 day of relative recovery. So that's again where, you know, the scheduling of the recovery matters.
Okay.
And I think, again, from a recovery standpoint, hopefully the primary message that I want to share is that you got to schedule your recovery like you schedule everything else in your plan, or it becomes an afterthought. And when it becomes an afterthought, your brain, your mind can play crazy things on you. I remember when I trained for Comrades Marathon, you know, 56 miles of, you know, ultra running. And so I would go out and run a marathon as a training run. And then the next day go out and run another 15 miles more because that was part of the plan.
Yeah.
And then the third day I had a day off and I was beside myself, not knowing what to do with myself. Because I had, you know, when you get to the point of running, you know, two long runs back to back like that, it's hard to step it down to almost nothing.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. A couple of things come to mind. Number one is the plan, 100%. If you do not have a plan, it's really hard to follow recovery. Like you don't even think about it. It is more than an, or it's less, more than an afterthought. it's not a thought because, and then what you're labeling it as, a day off, that does not sound like the same thing as recovery.
Right.
Recovery is an active part of the process of training versus just a day off. Day off, just saying a day off. Well, that doesn't sound right. I'll go out and run.
Right.
Whereas what you're saying, what I'm hearing you guys say is no, recovery is an active part. Not that you're actively doing something, but it is an active part of a training program that you need to have instituted into your training program.
Just like you would say, I'm going to run X number of miles, you're going to say, I'm going to recover for X number of hours, right?
Yeah. So not necessarily that we have a good understanding, or I'm probably going to get roughly the same answer, I'm guessing here, but we don't have necessarily, we need to listen to our body. Our body's going to tell us what we need, when we need to recover for the most part, but you do have it built into your training plan because there's a lot of plans. Like if I come and see you, you're going to have a really good idea that, hey, Lewis, you go out and do this, then you need to recover on this next day. How much time do I need to recover from whatever XYZ run or ABC run, 10 miler, 5 miler, 25 miler? I'm guessing you're going to say basically the same thing. Your body probably knows.
Well, because it's so spread out in, between athlete to athlete, there is no like standard answer, right?
Yep.
Because again, it's based on effort. It's based on, I mean,
yeah.
You know, we've run 30 or more marathons back to back to back without any problems, and our bodies have to deal with that. But I don't want a newer runner to figure out, oh, they should follow the same plan that we are.
Right.
Nor do I want someone that's a seasoned runner to feel that, that doesn't work. I've done, you know, all these marathons. I don't need, so you got to understand your body, right? You'll know it by the aches and pains and everything else that's going on too, that hopefully you learn like, hey, maybe I need a little bit more there or less here. But there's also two components to this recovery. One is the plan, but the other one is also the product. And we'll talk a little bit more of what are some of the recovery products that are out there to enhance your recovery. But knowing that that's coming, we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, to answer your question a little bit more. There are some strategies, right, that says like if you run for X number of hours, then you need to have, or X number of miles, I mean, you need to have X number of days of recovery.
Oh.
So like with a marathon, I want to say, again, Dave can chime in here as well, but it's like for every 5 miles or something that you run, you need like 8 hours of recovery or something like that. So
okay.
What is the analogy there?
Yeah. I've utilized, well, to step back a bit and kind of differentiate, like if you think about frequency, intensity, type, and time, we utilize that. So like, because I'm not 100% sure, like I don't always correlate
distance
to time of recovery necessarily because I factor in intensity.
Yeah.
And intensity has a pretty big implication in terms of how much you need to recover.
Yeah. So, if I run 26 miles, my heart rate's 130 the whole time. It's way different than running 26 miles and my heart rate's at 180 the whole time.
Right.
That's a much different intensity.
Yeah. So if you look at your whole training, your whole amount of training, whether you want to divide it in terms of miles or hours, and your whole amount of training, if you're able to identify that, say, 20% of that training is fairly high intensity, then taking a 24-hour period, a day of recovery, of pure rest, which can include some walking, to say, not doesn't have to be entirely on your butt, can include some walking, then that is going to be a pretty good plan to start with, or a pretty good way to think about it.
Okay.
Now, if you've added more intensity to that week and you've done more like a 30% amount, you will want to plan to have more time recovery, which doesn't necessarily mean you have to spend another, like an additional day completely resting. You may have the one day where you've rested the majority of the day, but then the next day, you could work out, but it must be at a very low intensity.
Yep, gotcha.
It must support the processes that are trying to happen in your body to continue recovering from that in high intensity.
And that could be light running.
Exactly.
Like super easy. If I'm normally a 7-minute pacer, you know, you go out and do 9-10 minute paces.
Right. My analogy, if my sort of race pace threshold, which it is about a 6:33 pace, then if I'm doing a recovery effort, I'm running at 9:05 pace.
Okay. Okay. Significantly slower. That's your,
right.
Okay.
So not just 30 seconds, but usually 2 to 3 minutes slower in terms of the pace.
Gotcha.
But if you just did a long run, you know, let's say you had a 20 miler, then, you know, give your feet a rest and then on your recovery day, but you can do other drills like upper body drills or core drills. Or if you're going to be on your feet, then don't be running, you know, based on effort which is why there's not a simple question to answer.
Right. Yeah.
But I think for our listeners, again, first figuring out that recovery, yes, needs to be programmed into the plan. Secondly, figuring out that recovery is very specific to each individual based on what you're training for, how hard you're training, and where you are in your training plan. So this is where, again, working with a professional matters. So where I think we lose sight of recovery is when we're trying to just, because we almost like know enough to be dangerous as individuals. So we think that we're recovering when we're not. Or on the other end, what sometimes happens is that we're spending too much time in that recovery zone. So then we lose the training effort. So there is a balance between recovering just the right amount or spending too much time in recovery where we lose all the training effort.
Yeah, I think Mitch and I are kind of like opposites there. I probably spent a little too much time in there, but yeah.
And so then I briefly mentioned product.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of different products out there that allows your tissues to heal better. And I think we've mentioned like branched chain amino acids at some point, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But there's also like post recovery drinks that you wouldn't necessarily take before or during. And so the kind of products that you take, you know, during your training and also post training can help you to recover more efficiently. So the three products there, there's four products that come to mind. And again, Dave can chime in here with others. There's the branched chain amino acids. You know, your body is made out of protein. Protein is necessary to heal and regroup and build. So taking a branched chain amino acid that has the right amino acid protein base to rebuild the muscle is key.
Made of amino acids.
Right.
Hence the reason to use.
Okay.
Yes. So yeah, just to that's a good point. Yeah, we take for granted that people
know.
This.
Yeah, and I have no idea.
Yeah, an amino acid is a protein, but it's the smallest block, the building block of a protein.
Okay.
So by taking in that smaller block, it's much quickly absorbable, and then there's different amino acids that do different things. And so having isoleucine, glucine, and leucine are the three main ones that help with healing.
I thought you were naming Peanuts characters like well, that's why Lucy and that, I'm like, yeah, who, so, what?
Lucy, Charlie, and the Peanuts.
Yeah.
Gallery.
She's a good amino.
but so having the right types of amino acids in your product matters, or you won't get the right healing recovery.
Okay.
Then there's the electrolytes. We've talked about electrolytes, right? That's important for cellular function. And that's important even afterwards. So having a meal that has enough sodium post workout can be important in terms of helping that recovery to happen. There's calories. So making sure that, you know, you're burning calories while you're working out. You're not going to be able to replace all of them, but having something caloric in a long workout is going to be key to helping you recover better. And then the post-recovery, there's things like, you know, Endurox, right, where you're getting a caloric drink that has some of the amino acids in there as well as some of the calories to kind of rebuild your muscles and fill in some of those gaps that you still can get from food. But by the time you take in that food and it gets down to your digestive system and breaks down into the smaller compound, and maybe the foods that you take in may not have all the right compound blends in there, you know, you can get recovery drinks that do. So your healing, your recovery tends to be better.
So you're saying, see if I was hearing this correctly, but that your during workout nutrition can set you up for recovery.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For sure. And I think when I was training for my ultra and running back-to-back days, the days that, yeah, because sometimes, gosh, we all know the answers, but we still forget. We get home and then like there's this other thing that we got to do and you forget to have your recovery drink. And I remember on the days that I missed my post-workout recovery drink, I had a harder day the next day in terms of how I felt during that workout. And the days that I took it, I'm like, can it be? Is it just psychological or is it really making that much of a difference? But in my opinion, it made that much of a difference.
Yeah.
And so when I hear about people that are needing to do that because they are training for the ultras and they're trying to run back-to-back days and the next day becomes a little bit more of a struggle and the effort doesn't feel right, they feel more fatigued and they get done and all they want to do is just like lay on the couch. Well, part of that is because, again, they didn't structure the you know, the intake correctly, the product correctly.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I did not structure my marathon correctly. I took like...
Your 16-mile marathon?
Yeah, my 16-mile marathon. I think ish. I took, six or eight little cookies, and that was my nutrition.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't have anything else. I was like, well, I'll take these. And
you think with the amount of running you do, you'd have a whole box of...
Well, here's a problem. We just went through a long break. Like last year, I didn't hardly do anything. So we went through the cupboard at the beginning of the year, and we're like, expired. Threw it all away. And then I went online, and I actually filled out the... what's the brand that you recommended?
Oh, yes, Infinite Nutrition.
No. The other one.
The Precision?
Precision?
Yeah, because they have an online profile. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went on there and filled that out, and I have a cart. It's like ready to go. I just put in my credit card.
What was your sodium based on the, what you pulled
in? Oh, you're at, I don't remember. I did. What's yours?
Mine was 1,700.
And so mine might have been like 1,200 or something. Mine was like 1,200, I think.
Yeah, and this is where I told the listeners again when we talked about sodium, how, when you do the calculation of what we get on race day, we're probably getting maybe a couple of hundred milligrams of sodium. If you're not like jumping into the pickle juices and, specifically. If you're just trying to rely on the Gatorade and the goose,
right,
you're looking at a couple of hundred. And not even per hour, like for the entire event is what you're going to be getting in terms of milligrams. And the 1,200 that you are taking is the recommendation per hour.
Right.
So that's a huge difference. But I've done that test and I've changed my sodium.
I will say this.
And I've noticed a difference.
Well, I'll say this. I did not have enough nutrition, obviously, because I'm taking like some cookies and they don't break down the same as like what one of those products will and get into my system as quickly. However, I took two things. Number one, I took a bag of the salt chews, which you take two of those every 2 miles. And I think that gets me around maybe like 800 or something like that. I don't remember exactly. I'd have to look at it. But I went above and beyond. I took two of the Hammer. Is it the Hammer? That's the ones you recommend?
Yeah.
No, the salt caps.
Oh, the S-caps.
S-caps. Yeah. I took two of those before I started the run. And I took a bag with me. I said, Terrence said, take them with you and just learn how to do it. And so I took them with me. And at mile, I don't know, when I decided I was going to do the marathon, I went to grab that bag out. And guess what? I had dropped that bag somewhere along the way. And all I had left was a few of the chews, which did help. But at any rate, I will say that I believe taking all those chews along the way helped me.
Yes, it can make a difference. You just gave me a flashback to when I did Steelhead years ago. And I remember I got off the bike and like, I'm going to need some salt on this run. I'm going to be cramping. And so I just grabbed some salt, threw it in the back of my tri-jack, my tri-shirt, and I'm out running about a mile in. Like, I reached back there. I'm like, there's like sand in my pocket.
Oh, no.
And that's when I realized that those capsules, like, dissolved. Because I didn't put them in a bag. I just threw them in the back there.
Oh, no. Yeah, so, they break down in your stomach.
Very quickly. Yes. Like, within the first mile. Just, it was a little fluid. Yeah. So I literally put my hand in. I was, like, licking, just trying to get the salt. At that point, I didn't know if it was the sodium or the sweat.
Yeah. It was salty tasting.
The things we do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think from a recovery standpoint, though, it's important to understand all the different components of recovery. Don't take your recovery for granted. Don't just assume that, well, a day of rest is enough. You know, like I said, there's a plan and there's a product. So, depending again on your race goals and how much you're working out and how well you want to recover, it's important to understand what's out there. And again, reach out to us. That's why we try to be a resource to our athletes. And yes, we are physical therapists, but we're also athletes ourselves and personal trainers and exercise physiologists within our team. So there's a lot of information that we're happy to share with you and help you be a better version of yourselves.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking to those comments too about like fatiguing, you know, feeling the effects and how your body's responding to recovery and items that you can use. If a lot of listeners, especially, and all of us have been in the situation where you are in a race and you don't follow your nutrition plan correctly.
Oh,
you don't follow the plan.
Never done that before. Oh my goodness.
Exactly. You get to the end of the race and you bonked and you, sometimes you can identify, I didn't take what I was intending on taking, or I didn't do it the way I should have. therefore my race suffered at the end. And so kind of that microcosm of that individual race and suffering by the end then is similar to throughout a week. If you're not taking in the calories and you're not getting in the protein, if you're not getting in the sodium and replacing the sodium because of hot conditions or whatever, you're sweating too much.
Yep.
And you get into that deficit, then yeah, you can take your recovery day and say you don't, again, you don't take in the necessary product, then you still kind of feel like crap.
Yeah.
Moving in, going to the next week where you're starting to train again because your body hasn't gotten what it's been depleted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The recovery is not just relative, it's active.
Yes. Right?
And so, you know, keep that in mind as you go out there and hit the pavements or the pools or the bike lanes. And is there anything else that we want to talk about in terms of recovery, Dave?
Well, there's a lot I could talk about.
Wait a minute. We have toys at our practice again.
Yes. You know, that's actually what I was thinking.
So one of our rooms, it's actually called the Don Kern, you know, giving ode to the man that started the Grand Rapids Marathon.
Yeah.
The Don Kern Cool Adventures Recovery Room.
Oh.
And the question,
this doesn't sound fun.
The question on Lewis's mind is, and what is this cool adventures recovery room?
I think it has to do with ice and a bath.
No, ice is too much to maintain. We're next level.
Gotcha.
We actually have a hyperbaric chamber in there. Dave's going to tell you all about
that.
You showed me that.
Yes.
And we have pneumocrine compression boots. So from a recovery standpoint, if an athlete wants to come in and get one of those services, it'll be available through our menu where they can choose time in either component or in both. So, Dave.
So let's talk about that.
Right. A lot of people know about the recovery boots for sure. With the hyperbaric chamber, it's a really interesting and very quickly emerging space in sports science.
For recovery. Because it's been well known for like training yourself to run at altitude, right? Am I thinking the right thing here?
There's different applications.
Yes.
Of hyperbaric there, yeah.
Scuba diving.
Yeah.
Different application. This application.
Yeah, exactly. Historically, they've used hyperbaric chamber for, the bends, exactly. And you're trying to increase the pressure.
What am I thinking of? Where they get in a big
tube.
You're talking about altitude training.
Yeah, yes. Where they get in the.
That's not a hyperbaric chamber, though.
Oh, so you're. Wait, what do you. Don't you have one of those?
So many questions, Lewis.
Well, don't you have. Didn't you show me a room with.
A coffin?
No, I was thinking you had one with the. For altitude training.
No. I would love to have that. So you showed me the one for the hyperbaric chamber.
Oh,
where it looks like a little capsule.
What you're thinking of is limiting your oxygen.
Yeah.
Sort of as if you were at altitude.
Yeah.
Limiting your body's availability of oxygen.
Yeah.
Therefore, it adapts to that environment.
Yep.
This with the hyperbaric.
Actually, the opposite.
Essentially the opposite, where you're more or less. Or you are pressurizing the air around you in a capsule to 1.3 times our normal ambient air.
We got to get you into that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does this do?
So if you're pressurizing 1.3 times, your body is able to literally take in 1.3 times more oxygen per breath.
Gotcha.
Right, I was going to say, the sake of the listeners, does any of that oxygen get absorbed through the skin as well, or is it all just through inhalation breathing?
But, yeah, it's both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
And obviously, the more oxygen you have going into your body, the faster recovery happens.
The easier that oxygen can get into your blood, it just can very efficiently flow along the blood capillaries and the blood pathways to your tissues.
Yeah, which again, not to take for granted, but for our listeners, you breathe in oxygen, you breathe out CO2. So what we're doing is we're giving you more oxygen so that oxygen can be utilized more efficiently by your system.
Okay.
So essentially with this apparatus, an hour is the typical recommended amount of time that you would spend there. It hasn't been shown, drastically more. Hasn't been shown to be that much more beneficial kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Does it remove wrinkles?
I will. I will consult with the research.
There may be another use for this chamber.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So the fact
that we can have that option available to our athletes tells you about the level in which we're willing to go to practice to provide what we can. But we're also blessed that we could have that piece of equipment donated to us by Dave.
Oh, wow.
And so, we enhance our practice in many ways.
Wow.
And then I know you kind of like skipped over the pneumatic boot because like people know it, but maybe explain it to people that don't know it. What is that?
Right. The pneumatic compression boots definitely have, there are several companies out there that make boots that really the way your body pumps blood, as we've sort of talked about it a bit here already, when your body is pumping blood through, it gets into the capillaries, but then it gets the oxygen deficit blood, so the not oxygen rich blood goes into veins, then which is then taken back up to the heart and lungs to be reoxygenated.
Gotcha.
So in order to help that process happen, we use compression around your extremities. So a compression around your feet, calves, and thighs all the way up. That's why the boots go up to your groin.
Yep.
So the recovery boots will do just that. They will provide compression.
Like sequential compression from the foot all the way back.
All the way back
to the groin.
To help promote that flow of blood. So it's allowing you to sit and relax.
At the
same time that you are pumping blood more efficiently back to the heart.
Okay.
So, and this, we actually have a little like reclining chair in there. We use a company called Rapid Reboot. So they're our go-to for neuro compression. And it uses air that is pumped through a compressor into this boot, into this device that goes like over your whole leg. And then it'll add pressure at your foot. It can release it and add pressure at the next level. It's got like four different chambers. Or it can add pressure and hold, and while holding then the next one and the next one. And it actually enhances the whole flow towards the groin. And why we want flow to go towards the groin is because that's your exit point into your lymphatic system. And we have you in a recliner versus just sitting up. It's because the flatter you are, the better we're able to also use gravity to enhance it and not create any kink points in the groin.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
It's a really cool recovery tool. They have pieces for the arm, for the hips, for the low back. And I think we don't have the arm piece, but I think we have the back, the hips, and the legs.
Okay.
At the practice. And you'll be able to schedule. And with those pieces, you know, anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, it'll give you a pretty good squeeze, relax, recovery. And you do feel good, you know, after going through that.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And what else, Dave? What other toys do we have?
Oh, we've got a really cool power plate system.
Oh, yeah. A vibration plate.
Yeah, you showed me that.
So the vibration technology that we're using right now can be used for active, you know, things as well as recovery things, depending on how we use the frequency on the vibration. But just for our listeners to know, that there are multiple tools out there that can enhance recovery outside of the things that you can do at home on your own. So plan, product matters, active recovery versus relative recovery matters, but think of recovery as part of your whole program versus it being an afterthought. When it's an afterthought, that's where we don't take it seriously enough, we don't do it correctly, and then we wonder why our bodies don't perform the way we want it to perform.
Yeah. No, I think that's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you try to recover just as needed, so to say, then you're less likely to actually take a day to recover.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to do an easier workout and be like, oh, I feel great. I don't need to recover. And then that's where your tissues get behind and your tissues get that chronic injury that they can't repair or recover from.
Yeah. No, this has been good. And I think, if there's... a couple of major takeaways, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's plan the recovery. It's needed. It needs to be in your training plan. And there are multiple ways. You can do it at home, certainly, but there are also some other ways that you can do it. For instance, going to like a PT Sports Pro and visiting different tools in a chamber. You can run at elevation with. No, wait a minute. That's not what that's for. There are multiple tools that you can check out at PT Sports Pro as well to help in that recovery process. And yeah, no, well, thank you guys for this. I know a lot more from having talked about this. And I love the way you guys explain it. I can't emphasize that enough. Love the way that you break it down. Way more simple for me to understand with regards to what's going on in the body. Because I understand, like, yeah, you tell me you're a professional, you went to school, and you've learned all this and you have tons of experience. I trust you. But man, it sure helps to understand, like, absolutely, what's going on in the body and the why, because it is like a light bulb that goes off and you go, oh my goodness, that makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, helps a lot of us take it more seriously or want to do it.
And I think that's really a foundation principle of how we work, right? We want to help you understand everything that you need to understand about your body, about what we do. All of these things makes you a better individual. So, no, I'm happy to bring you another episode of You Don't Know What You Don't Know, because now you know.
Thanks, guys.